Started. Last musical chairs. Okay. Hi, folks. I'm Daryl Strauss. I'm going to be talking here about Asterix and Linux and voiceover IP. We got a lot of stuff to cover. I'm going to try to work you from the very basics, like you've never seen voiceover IP, you don't really have any idea what we're talking about. We're going to cover some terminology in the phone industry. That's the worst part of this, is the terminology is really dense, and it's all different acronyms that, in fact, you can read the descriptions of the acronyms, they don't necessarily make sense. And then we're going to build up to an asterisk configuration, how you might use asterisk to do lots of interesting things on top of that. As I was saying to people earlier, this is not actually what I do for a living. I make a playback system for film special effects, which is really what I'm most known for, is doing a bunch of work with Titanic for rendering and doing 3DFX graphics hardware, et cetera. But this was all really interesting stuff, and I had a need for it. So I went ahead and dug into it and started playing with it and built up a PBX at my house for my home office. And I have a few virtual employees, and it made it really nice to tie all that in. So I started digging into this and said, hey, you know, this is a fun thing to do a talk about. So I'm here. Yeah. No. Well, I pay them real money when they actually have to do anything. When it's just when I just give them equipment and they sit at their house, I don't actually pay them. So that's why they're sort of virtual employees. We're going to start kind of in the basic world here. First, let me ask a couple questions. First of all, how many people have actually done anything with VoIP? You know, have some experience, kind of know what I'm talking about. Okay, that's a good number of people. That's a good thing. For the rest of you, I assume you're already regular telephone users and you're just trying to learn about this stuff, and that's fine too. I think we'll cover all that. How many of you people are talking about it for like a home office or small office versus, you know, a bigger company and application spaces? Are you small office? Yeah, okay. That's most people. So that's my world too. So I'm going to start at the very beginning and we'll sort of work up piece by piece. This is your picture in the old world, and the reason it's the old world view is the public switch telephone network is one node there. We'll break that down in a little more detail afterward. But you've got this old analog telephone at your house, and I'm going to use that icon throughout to kind of represent an analog telephone. You've got some home wiring at your house that's inside. Then there's this box on the outside of your house that's called the network interface device. That's the point where the phone company says, we drop your wire here, and anything beyond this is your problem. That's why they call that the point of demarcation or a demark. And then there's a wire that goes between your house and the phone company to some central office, and then they do a bunch of stuff on the back end that eventually connects you to whoever it is you're calling. That's kind of your standard picture for telephones. And in today's world, it gets a little more complicated from the standard telephone point of view, because that packet switch telephone network and the public switch telephone network in the middle, you have ILEX, which are incumbent local exchange carriers. Those are your local phone companies like Verizon and SBC, et cetera. And then you have competitive local exchange carriers, which are other people that are using the incumbent's equipment, but working out of their office and providing local service. So there's more choices for who you can get your local phone distance from. And IXC is an internet exchange carrier. That's a long-distance company, so you can pick which long-distance company your LEC talks to for you to make your long-distance calls. So all of this is sort of the phone company side of things. Your end of it really didn't change much. You still go through the same interfaces, but you got a lot of different stuff on the back end. There are a couple different ways that you can connect to a phone company. Analog phone lines are what most of you are using at your house. You know, they just come in, you plug your phone in, that's pretty much it. They're very simple. ISDN are digital phone lines. You typically get what's called 2B channels for voice and a D channel, which is sort of a control channel, a data channel. They're digital phones. You're sending all your information through at least the telephone company side of it digital and then eventually back to analog when you deliver it to whoever you're calling. And then there's a thing called a PRI, which is basically a bigger bundle of data for a business use. It's layered over a T1 wire, the same thing that you'd use for data T1. You use for a PRI interface, and that gives you 23 phone lines and a D channel, a control channel. And so businesses use PRIs mostly because after you get a small number of ISDN lines or analog phone lines, it becomes cheaper to just switch to a PRI, and you can use all or some of those lines. You know, it depends. The tariffing is really different, so I can't even tell you. It's on the order of, you know, 8 or 10. right? You decide it's much easier to just be a PRI than it is to be a... And you need different equipment, right? So that's the other... There's a hurdle there when you switch to a PRI because it's all different stuff than what you've got. You can't just plug a phone in. So when we add networking, we end up with a picture that looks more like this. You have your computer at home, you've got Ethernet at home, and then maybe you've got an ADSL router, or you've got a cable modem that's letting you talk to either the central office through your DSL. There's a thing called the DSLAM in the central office that connects you out to your ISP and out to the internet, or you're at some cable head end and then they connect you off to the internet that way. So that's your sort of typical, I have broadband at the house kind of setup. If you're a business, you've got a T1 line maybe, or even a T3 or something faster. It depends what level of service you need at your business. But in any case, the picture is fairly much the same. You've got some internet connection that gets you to an ISP and then gets you to the rest of the internet. So voice over IP allows you to do this crossover between internet and telephone. And all we're really doing, if you look at a PRI, it's already a digital data line, right? And so all we're really doing is taking packets off the internet and resending them out that digital data line. And that's what your voice over IP provider is doing for you. I mean, that's basically their entire business, is take the packets from one end and digital, do some format convert and stick it out the other. We can use voice over IP at really three different areas. We can use it inside our office. We can say we don't want to run analog phone lines to all of our desktops anymore. We'd rather just take an Ethernet cable and plug it into our phone and use phones there. And your outbound connection is separate. You could do that any way you want, right? Could be voice over IP, could be a standard analog PRI, whatever. You have what we call direct inward dial. That's a phone number. So somebody can call you on a line and have it come into your internal facility that way through voice over IP. So they call a voice over IP phone number and it comes into you. And again, you can do whatever you want on the inside. And we got termination, that's outgoing calls that you've made through a voice over IP connector, and he's going to eventually connect back to the plain old telephone system on the outbound call. So those are the three places we can use it. And we have choices among all of those. Again, one of the nice things we're going to see throughout this talk is voice over IP gives you a lot of flexibility. And you can choose different DID, inward dial phone number providers who give you better service for one reason or another. You can choose different outbound companies that give you different choices of options for service. So we get a lot of flexibility out of using voice over IP. It's not restricted to the phone line that's coming into your house like your ILEC is. I mean, that's been the single biggest monopoly aspect of phones, is that ILEC has that wire between the central office and your house, and they monopolize that piece. But as soon as you add broadband, we got another connection to the internet and to a much larger collection of providers. We're going to throw some more terminology at you. Terminology is a little dense at the beginning of this talk, but just trying to get these out there so you sort of know what we're talking about. An FXS is a foreign exchange station. That's basically an analog telephone. So you'll see things, cards that support one FXS or four FXS ports. These are how you would plug your analog telephone into some other digital device. An FXO is a device that knows how to talk to a phone, right? Knows how to signal ring on the phone and do the rest of that. So we can talk about FXO interfaces, and you can connect to the phone company with your FXO interface. It's a little confusing in that FXS devices speak FXO protocol, and FXO devices speak FXS protocol, because whether you're talking about the one end or the source or the destination of the connection. So we'll try to avoid. It makes sense. It's a little we'll try to avoid getting too much into those to confuse you on too much. And then you'll talk about something called an analog telephone adapter, an ATA, and basically an ATA is a little box. It's about yay big. I decided I'm not going to do too much show and tell at this because my talk is already long. But it's got an Ethernet port on one side and it's got a phone port on the other. And that's the simplest way that you're going to get started with voice over IP if you call a standard broadband connect, a standard voice over IP provider that does work over broadband like Vonage or BroadVoice or Speakeasy or SipPhone or any of those guys. They're going to give you one of those little boxes and you're just going to plug it in. So we'll talk about that in a minute. By the way, feel free to interrupt me with questions if you catch stuff. Hopefully we'll cover everything. The simplest ATA is just Ethernet on one side and an analog telephone on the other.
And an analog telephone to a different type of
to a proprietary system. For example, I think at my work we have a Nortel system that we've got something called an ATA that converts their digital system.
You could have ATAs for other things. That's correct. I mean, I'm talking about a VoIP ATA, but because you do use them to convert a digital. We'll talk about this some more, but basically it just speaks Ethernet. And you can get it bundled with other devices. So there are people now selling, Linksys and D-Link are selling routers that do, you know, 4 regular Ethernet ports for Ethernet, 1 port that's for your, and 1 port for your analog phone line, right? And it knows how to speak all the protocols over one of those Ethernet ports to talk out your wide area network and talk to your VoIP provider. But all it is an Ethernet port, and it's going to run certain protocols on it. It's a little processor. A little analog-to-digital converter to convert your voice into digital signals, a bunch of packet stuff to write the right kind of packets and send them out the Ethernet, and vice versa. When we get on the higher end, we start talking about a PBX. Oh, I left Exchange highlighted. But a PBX is a local phone switch. It allows you to have a bunch of phone extensions that connect to a smaller number of phone lines. So that when you call in and it says dial extension 203, right, you came in on one line and you could pick from a whole bunch of different destination extensions. So that's basically what a PBX does for you. There's a lot of features that go along with PBX, voicemail and 8 call agents and lots of other things we'll talk about that are building on top of that. But the basic concept is a few wires in and lots of extensions on the back end. An interactive voice response system, an IVR, is another thing that comes with PBXs a lot of the time where it says, hello, thank you for calling Digital Ordnance. If you'd like sales, press 3, right? That's just a voice menu, right? So we've got those things. And then we got a thing called a key system. And I only bring this up because it's sort of a nagging point on my in my side about Asterisk right now. A key system is sort of another kind of PBX. And the distinction that makes that is interesting about key systems is that it does a much tighter job tracking which lines are in use by which phones, right? So when somebody calls, a specific light on a phone lights up that says that line is in use, and you can grab that line and use it for something else. And it, some of the features of a key system are sort of missing from Asterisk because it doesn't do this part of a PBX yet. So I bring up key systems because it's sort of an important feature that they need to add. But the biggest use that you'll see for a key system is things like, you call your secretary and your secretary says, hey, boss, there's this call here, right? And the boss can just push a line on his phone and pick it up, right? Rather than the secretary having to pick up the phone and transfer it to the boss's phone number. You can do that with extensions, but it's a lot more work than having 2 lights on the phone that are all tied to the same wire, right? And you just push that line, right? So key systems tie in a line very tightly to a button on a phone and a light on a phone. So they're a little different than PBXs. But a lot of PBXs do key system features and vice versa as well. Key systems do some PBX features. We're going to talk about we're down the next level in the process. We've got some protocol stuff. There's SIP, the session initiation protocol. SIP is how you start a call. You go up and say, hey, I want to talk to you. What protocols do you speak? And let's get this connection started. And we're done talking. Let's shut down the connection. It does that sort of control stuff. The real-time transport protocol is what actually takes a voice packet and sends it to the other end, and so you can get the data for what you're actually saying. Inter-Asterisk exchange is a specific thing to Asterisk, but it's a protocol that allows us to bundle up a whole bunch of voices lines together, all the voice data that goes along, all the control information, and send it between 2 Asterisk systems so they can be tightly tied together. You can call a phone number on one, and it rings on the other, and has some nice features. It tunnels well and that sort of thing through NAT. Lots of other advantages to IAX. H323 is an older teleconferencing voice system. If you've seen GNOME Meeting, it's an H323 system for video and audio conferencing. And it came out of the conferencing world. Some people use it on phones too, right? There's some support for it that we'll see as we go along. So I was already talking about this a little bit in ATA, right? When we talked about the ATA, we see that you've got a voice and you've got a telephone speaking and your voice is talking on the telephone. And that goes into this box, and this box has to then encode it. So what it's going to do is digitize that voice. It's going to do some compression on that voice because we don't want to carry that full signal. And we got a lot of choices for different kinds of encodings. The ULAW and ALAW are pretty equivalent to what the phone company uses. It's a 56K channel with 8-bit data, and ULAW and ALAW are just two different formats for what the numbers mean in the file. GSM is the same thing your cell phone uses these days as an encoding, same format. 729 is a compression codec that's actually very good but proprietary, so it doesn't come with Asterix by default. You have to buy licenses for it. Your phones that you buy probably do support it, but it's fairly good compression, fairly good quality trade-off on that one. And you have this problem of transcoding in some cases. When you go into an Asterix box, if you connect to your Asterix box and you're using ULAW encoding and you go out to another device that only speaks GSM, then the Asterix box has to convert between those two formats for you. So we call that transcoding. And it's sort of a bad thing because you burn a lot of cycles doing that for not a lot of good reason. And like I said, numbers range from about 56K to 10K for your voice channels. But by the time you get to talk about 10K, you're talking about really, really bad sounding voice, like, you know, tin can quality voice. And as you move lower and lower quality, things like recognizing DTMF codes, right, the phone codes, when you punch numbers on the phone, gets more and more difficult as you compress it further because they stop sounding as much like they should, right? So you got to be careful about some of the trade-offs. Things like sending faxes, we'll talk about that too. Higher compressions are a problem. And I'm going to bring these up because they're issues later, but your firewall may well do something called NAT, Network Address Translation. It's the way that you basically have one IP address that shows up to your internet service provider, and you use a lot of internet addresses behind it, and it automatically translates those as the packets come in and out. That causes some problems for us in the voice over IP world. And quality of service is sort of hopefully helpful for us in the voice over IP world. It's a way to say, these packets are more important than these other ones, so send them first, right? Make sure they don't get slowed down. We want to do that for our voice traffic, because if our voice traffic slows down, we'll notice, we'll hear quality breakups. We'll talk some more. Yeah, exactly. I'll talk some more about why. I'm bringing these up so people have seen the terms, but we'll talk about what the issues are because there are some issues there. So that's the terminology. So we're done through the heavy lifting. Okay, how's everybody doing with everything? Is that all? Everybody kind of get a feel for what I got there? Didn't scare you too much? Okay, good. I'm going to work through a series of examples here. And my goal out of this is to give you examples that you can try for very little money in most of these cases. In fact, you know, the most expensive piece of equipment I think I put in this list is about $100. And some of this you can do for free today. And then you can talk about buying services that are monthly charges and you know, more of an issue. But if you just want to start playing, we're going to work up from the basic stuff to more advanced examples and let you get started with this if you just want to fool around. So our starting VoIP picture here is we've got a soft phone. We're not going to buy an analog telephone adapter. We're not going to buy anything else. We're going to run a piece of software on our laptop or on our PC that's a soft phone. And we're going to use a headset because sound quality is awful without a headset. And if you're trying to do it with a laptop and things, you get echo because your speakers and your mic pick it up. So we're going to spend $20 and buy a headset too while we do this. But we're not going to buy anything else other than the headset. And there's a particular provider I like. There are lots of people that are actually providing free services for you. And these are VoIP to VoIP calls, right? You can't call anybody who isn't another VoIP user. You can't go back to the regular analog telephone system. But if all you want to do is call between two VoIP people, it works. And I like Free World Dial-Up a lot. Jeff Pulver's done a lot of neat stuff with it. SIPphone, Earthlink has a service now. Skype has some non-standard protocols that they use, but they also, all these people provide VoIP-to-VoIP calls for free, right? You're just using your internet bandwidth. All they're doing is letting you talk, figure out who else is logged in, and start sending packets. And that's their only involvement. So, yeah. What's that?
Like Free World Dial-Up will do a toll-free
Yeah, they will. Free will dial-up will do 800 number termination. Yeah, you can actually call real 800 numbers with free will dial-up. Yeah, that's correct. And there are peering arrangements with other VoIP providers. Yeah, I talk about peering numbers on that slide. I haven't got that far down yet.
So what's the problem with Skype?
Well, Skype has their own protocol for some of this, and I know that they're switching to SIP for some of it, but I don't know the details. I just know that they're using their own... Right. That's sort of, yeah. Right. So do almost all these other people, SIP phone, et cetera. So we'll talk some more about getting back to PSTN. But they use their own stuff that's a little different. And to be honest, I haven't dealt with Skype at all, so I don't have a lot of the details myself. I mean, other people may know more about that than me. You got another question over here?
Well, just about calling between the
right. So I was saying free calls to VoIP providers. There's things called peering numbers, and you guys both brought this up. Peering numbers allow you to dial a number that isn't on your local VoIP provider, and it will tie between the two of them. So if I want to dial, so I'm on Free World Dial-Up, and 473770 is my Free World Dial-Up phone number. They hand me a phone number. And if I want to call somebody on Earthlink, I dial **373 followed by his Earthlink phone number. And that will tell Free World Dial-Up, hey, I want to call Earthlink, and it will send, and Free World Dial-Up will do the connection between the two of them for me. And it's like dialing a country code, yeah. That's what peering numbers do. And they're different each way, right? So you gotta, he needs his peering number to get back to me on Free World Dial-Up. But one of the things I like about Free World Dial-Up is they peer with just about anybody. I mean, as long as the provider will talk to Free World Dial-Up and give them the information, they'll peer with them. I think Skype might be on there. I'm not sure.
There's also a few people who will give you a free PSTN phone number.
Yeah, well, I'm getting there. You're getting ahead of me. Stop it. we're building this up from the ground up, right? We can do... So your computer uses SIP/RTP, right, as we talked about those two protocols, right? It's going to use SIP to talk to Free World Dial-Up to say, hey, I'm here, and I'm making a call, and then it starts sending data packets, and Free World Dial-Up will take care of forwarding those data packets. And you're using a soft phone, and we also have this concept of a SIP address. You don't really need, SIP doesn't need to be phone numbers. You can call, Daryl@daryl.net, and you can connect to me because it's all internet anyway, right? So there's this problem with the old world telephone numbers and old telephones that don't have keypads, and the new world where we have machines with keypads or phones where you can put text in and we can make more sophisticated phone numbers. So we're going to see a battle between those things for a while. But SIP addresses can actually be URLs, SIP:\name@hostname, and you can call people that way. But so you try this out. You buy your little headset, and you go connect with Free World Dial-Up. And Free World Dial-Up has a few other numbers for things like tell me the time, tell me my phone number, let me go to a chat room. That they support. So even if you don't know anybody else to call, you can try Free World Dial-Up and play with those numbers, right? If you have no friends, you can still call Free World Dial-Up and talk to somebody. So we were talking a little bit about the protocol there. Your SIP device registers with your provider, says, hey, I'm here, right? That provider is typically referred to as a proxy server. You dial a SIP URL or a phone number. SIP does the protocol to say, hey, you know, what encodings do you speak, right? Are we ready? Can we set this whole thing up? Are we allowed, right? Is it permitted for me to make this call? And then RTP starts sending data back and forth. There's a little thing called reinvite, which is kind of nice, mostly for your local network, but when we start dealing with the SIP phones at the local level. But reinvite says, I talked to this proxy server, let's say my Asterisk server, and my Asterisk server said, do you want voicemail? Do you want to dial an extension? What do you want to do? And let's say I dial Joe's extension, reinvite says, hey, instead of sending the packets all the way to my Asterisk server and having my Asterisk server send it back to Joe's phone, why don't we just have my phone send it straight to Joe's phone? Asterisk will continue to manage the SIP channel, so it knows what's going on, knows that there's still an active connection and that you haven't hung up and all that sort of stuff. But the data, the voice data, will go straight between the two phones rather than bouncing through the Asterisk box every time. Changes what you can do with the Asterisk box. If the Asterisk box isn't in the loop, it can't detect codes if you type them, and you know it no longer knows what you're doing on the voice line at all. So it can't record the call, and it can't use it for transfers. But if your phone does those things, which real SIP phones will do, then you don't need Asterisk in the loop, and you can make the bandwidth go straight between the two of them, which is really nice. And eventually your call ends and SIP says, bye, we're done, and the connection shuts down. So as was already commented by one of our astute viewers in the audience, you can actually get a phone number and have it route back into your SIP phone. So that's sort of your next level of testing here on our loop. There's a service that I've played with called IP Call. There's another one back in New York, they're in like Washington. There's another one back in New York that I don't remember the name of. But what these people do is give me a phone number, right? It's a 370-something-something-something phone number. And anytime you call that phone number, it will take that data and send it off to some SIP phone number, which can be my free roll dial-up account, for example. And so now I've got a real live, you know, analog telephone. I can walk up to any phone in the world. I can dial that phone number and I can call into my PBX back at my house, because that's my real SIP device is my PBX. But I can ring that phone that's a SIP device. You scratch your head and go, how can they offer that service for free? Which is always one of my questions when people put services together is, you know, I didn't like the dot-com boom because A, I didn't make a lot of money off it. B, some of that stuff just didn't make any sense to me from a business point of view. But there's a thing called settlements in the phone industry, and I just bring this up for curiosity. But when you initiate a call, you've paid for your service through your phone company, right? I got my long distance from Verizon, right? So I pay Verizon money. But that call terminates at some other destination, and their equipment was involved in that process too, right? They had to make that call land at your friend's house or wherever it was. And they didn't get any money. Verizon got the money. So there's a thing called settlements, which phone companies do among themselves, which is anytime a call terminates, they make an agreement to trade money back and forth, right? So by putting your free service in the middle of nowhere where there are no local callers that are essentially getting this for free, right? Everybody is making a long distance call in, right? Then they're getting settlements on every call that comes into this service, and they're getting paid by the phone companies out of your, you know, out of the initiation charges. So, that seems to be the way they're making their money. So people with standard phone calls, once you sign up with a service like this, people with standard phones can make calls to you. You still can't call out to them. That's that termination problem. Costs money. But it's a useful service. It gives you a way to call into your PBX, and it's really useful for testing. So when you start playing with all this stuff, one of the things I like is the fact that I can get a second free roll dial-up number, and I can use IP call and have the free roll dial-up go into my test asterisk box and test everything I want to do, or even into the same asterisk box because asterisk can detect which line number I called in on. And I can do all my testing and make sure that I didn't break anything, because we'll talk about one of the uglinesses of asterisk is that the config files are bad. They're ugly. So it's easy to break them. So you really need to test, make small changes and test regularly. But it's a nice way to test. Now we're getting to the point where we're going to move up a notch and we're going to actually replace a standard analog telephone with a SIP phone. We're going to do real VoIP to the real PSTN incoming and outgoing calls. So this is your, lots of people offer this service. Vonage, BroadVoice, Packet A, SIPVoice, a ton of people offer this service. Basically, they're going to sell you one of those analog telephone adapters. They're going to do some setup charge, and you just plug a phone in. You plug one end into your Ethernet at home. You plug a phone in the other end. That's it. It's that easy. It works just like a regular phone. You can't tell the difference, right? Buddy of mine never had a phone line at his house, finally did this and was just like, wow, this is great. It really is easy. And they provide a lot of interesting services, too. You can get 800 numbers. You can get usually they come with all the calling features, caller ID and call waiting and three-way calling and all that kind of stuff. They have interesting calling plans that are usually, you know, all you can eat plans for, relatively small amounts of money, 20, 25, 30 bucks a month. And some of them do local calls and some of them do long distance and, you know, the whole nation and Canada, and some of them do international calling, all for fixed prices. So you really want to look at your providers and to see who's got the services you want. But you can do anything from, you know, at the low end, I've seen $5.95 a month. Bring your own device, meaning they're not shipping you anything. You have to configure it, and you just bring your own hardware. It's a fixed number of minutes outgoing, unlimited incoming, fixed number of outgoing minutes, right, for $5.95 a month. So they give you a phone number, and you can make calls. It's like $10 if you want to do unlimited in-state. It's like $20 if you want to do like several countries, you know, U.S. and several other, about 10 different, 20 different countries. And then they have another bigger plan that's like $30 a month that includes like 35 countries. So you got a lot of, you got a lot of choices. And, you know, pricing is going to vary from, you know, 10 to 30 bucks depending on which features you pick from whom. You know, one of the Business Week kind of magazines did a review of the VoIP, of the big VoIP providers, and I think their conclusion was AT&T CallVantage was like the best, but only by a really, really narrow margin, and everybody else tied for second. So, you know, from that point of view, I don't think there's a big difference, right? This is all really new, so, you know, you do need to check your stuff out and make sure you're dealing with a real player that does his stuff, but I don't think... Also very true, right? That is correct.
A major issue if you're working with Astra.
That is absolutely correct. And I talk about that some more too. But yes, it depends on what services you want, right? Again, I was just, this is the simple replace your phone model, right? Everybody does this, and it's all, you know, it's all a matter of what calling plan do you want. That's really what it is. Really, really easy. And most of them have very cheap, you know, initial setup charges and tear down charges. So even if you decide you hate it, right, you can, you know, it's not a big investment. The way these things work, again, we're going to talk a little bit more on the technical side, is that you're making a call out through your Ethernet device, and that could be, like I said, an ATA with an analog phone, or that could be a real SIP phone. That's my other icon there for a SIP phone. And it goes out through your ISP to your VoIP provider, and your VoIP provider tries to send it as far as possible through the Internet to get to a destination spot. If you're calling London, they don't want to make the long-distance call themselves. They want to tunnel it through IP and get to London before they make the call. And then they're going to jump back out to the PSTN to call a normal user, if necessary. If this is also another VoIP provider, if you're calling another VoIP number, they may never even go back to the PSTN. They may just go and stay on the Internet the entire way. That's sort of what they try to do. And POPs, point of presence, that will determine what phone numbers you can get. Various providers have their equipment in your central office. And if they have equipment in your central office, they can offer the same numbers that you would get out of your local area. So my numbers are 310-937. My VoIP provider actually doesn't provide numbers in 310-937. They do provide one in Culver City rather than Redondo Beach, which is 310-733. That's fine, right? So that's where actually I get my number out of Culver City. I don't really care. It's 310. No one can tell the difference. You know, it doesn't make any difference to me. More rural areas, you might care, right, that your number isn't in Florida when you're in, you know, Louisiana, right? But so you sort of care where they have points of presence. But how they make their outgoing calls is their problem. So if they don't have a nearby point of presence, that's their problem, and they'll figure out how to pay for it. You can also get a device that knows how to plug into both your analog phone line and your VoIP phone. In this particular case, I'm talking about a Sepora 3000. I like that box. There's some issues with echo, which is really going to be true for any of these ATAs to some degree or another. But I actually like the Sepora 3000 a lot. And that way I keep my analog phone line, and I still have my SIP phone capability out the other end. And so if I want to use 911 service, or I want to send a fax, for example, or a data call for my TiVo, having an analog line is still a useful thing. I can turn that line down to like the minimum phone service that the phone company offers, like $10 a month, because I don't really need to make many calls with it, and I don't even care if it's metered service, because I'm not going to make enough calls to make it make any difference. They're all local. They're, you know, really few calls, but it's still nice to have that as a backup, or if everything else, my internet connection's down, I really need to make a phone call, right? It's really nice to have that analog phone line there. So that's a device that can do both. You can also get cards that you can plug into your Astra system that will talk to the FXO, your regular phone company, as well. So there are other ways to solve that problem. But it's nice to have that backup analog phone line today. And the other part of that is that you can have a dial plan. I mentioned that here. A dial plan says, when I dial a certain pattern, how do you want me to send this call? This thing has two devices, two ports on the outside. It can go one through my VoIP provider and one through my regular analog phone line. So if I dial, you know, 9, maybe it goes out through my VoIP provider, and if I dial 8, it goes out through my PSTN line, right? My old one. If I dial 911, it goes out through my, you know, my analog line. So you've got the basic picture. You've got kind of how you hook VoIP into this process. And now Asterisk becomes another box in the loop, right? It's just a SIP device. It can also have analog. It can actually have a bunch of other phone cards plugged into it, and it can do more than just SIP. But it's really just another, it looks to the world like another phone device for all intents and purposes. It can speak SIP, it can speak IAX, it can speak H323. So that's how it would talk to other devices, other extensions in your facility. You can plug cards into your PC that you can plug in analog phones into, or you can plug it into your phone company lines, those FXS or FXO lines that we talked about. Asterisk allows multiple lines to be shared by multiple devices. I have 100 extensions, but I know only 2 or 3 people are making calls at a time, so I only have 3 lines out of the facility, right? But they can all call among themselves, that's no problem, and when they want to make a call out, there's 3 lines that they can use, right? Share it. Asterisk can play pre-recorded sounds, voice menus, or you can drive it through a lot of other things, but it can add sound into the pipeline here for you. It can detect DTMF codes, in other words, touch tones on your phone. So if you want to type a password in, right, it can detect that and read the number and do different things in its processing. And it can run programs. And we'll work up to this towards the end of the process here. But being able to run programs gives it a really powerful mechanism for turning this into a voice application platform, not just a PBX. Right? It has web access, it can run programs, it can talk out a phone. That's pretty much everything you need to write programs that now are phone-driven, right? So we're going to work up to that. Our first test with Asterisk looks a lot like our first test with the VoIP stuff, right? We're going to take Asterisk, and we're going to register it with Free World Dial-Up, so it's got another Free World Dial-Up number, and then you're going to use your soft phone to call into your Asterisk system. And you might use your IP call number to call into your Asterisk system, right? All of a sudden, you're getting calls. It's all digital. You haven't invested any more than your soft, you know, your headset and your soft phone, right? Because the rest of the services are all free. So I don't expect you to read this too much. I'll just kind of point at chunks of code here because I know you guys in the back can't read 12-point font. Try to avoid tripping over the cord. Up here, I've got an IAX configuration. This is basically telling it how it's going to connect to Free World Dial-Up. I'm going to use IAX to connect to Free World Dial-Up because it has a very nice, it tunnels through NAT very nicely. It has some other nice features about being able to do multiple extensions and that sort of thing. So I'll use IAX. You could use SIP to do this as well. I've got a bunch of stuff here telling it what kind of encoding do I want to use. I want to allow EULAW, and I don't want to use LPC-10 because it sounds like Mr. Roboto, right? And I've got a line here that says register, which says, hey, Free World Dial-Up, I'm user number 123456 with this password, right? I'm here, right? Every time my Asterisk box boots up, it will register with Free World Dial-Up to say, hey, I'm a phone that's online at the moment. I have a guest user, which just forces it how it handles people it doesn't know. If somebody connects through IAX that doesn't understand, and some other information about if I'm coming in from a Free World Dial-Up number I do understand, right, what do I do about it? And then we have this thing called the extensions.conf on the right-hand side, and that says, what do I do? Well, this is a script, right? What am I supposed to do when a call comes in? And that script has 2 lines in it. The first one says, if it's extension 123456, in other words, if you just called me from my Free World Dial-Up number, I want you to answer the phone, and then I want to play back Screeching Monkeys. And Screeching Monkeys is in the sets of sound files that come with Asterisk, right? Okay, so you've got this, you put this much that's basically the configuration files you're going to need, right? And you put this together and you have your Asterisk box up and you call it with your SIP phone, and your SIP phone has its phone number, and you type in the phone number for whatever the Asterisk box got assigned by Free World Dial-Up, and it should answer and play monkeys back at you, right? Very simple, right? But you've now looped it out through the Free World Dial-Up back into your own systems and demonstrated that you can call into your Asterisk box. Nice set of features. Feel like monkeys. It does. It has a Zapoteller thing, in fact, that'll play the tones that supposedly says this is a disconnected phone. So you can actually do lots of processing, and you can do processing on the numbers and stuff that come in. This is a more complicated but more useful setup for an asterisk system. We've already done the registration with IAX, but we're going to change our extensions.conf. Instead of just being that one two-line thing that I gave you before, this one's a little more complicated. We start down here from the bottom that says from free world dial-up. My IAX configuration said this is where we're going to start, from free world dial-up. And we're going to include the incoming chunk here that says what do we do with incoming calls, right? What options are we going to give them? And then we go to a macro here called main menu. And this is a script that says step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, answer the phone, set the digit timeout to 5 seconds. That's how much time you have between numbers. Set the response timeout to 10 seconds. If you stop for 10 seconds, it'll know it's done. Pick a random music on hold thing to use, which we're not really talking about, but it does music on hold. And then play this background greeting file, which was me saying, hi, thank you for calling Digital Ordnance, right? If you want sales, press 3, right? Et cetera. If we look at the incoming part, that's a little more, that's a pattern matching part of this, where we include a bunch of other extensions, which I don't have listed here. But we say extension 1, if you dial 1, then I want you to do the one step, which is connect to the voicemail system with user number 201. And if you dial the number 2, I want you to connect to the user mail, you know, the user voicemail 202. If you dial 8, I want you to just go to the voicemail system and, you know, this is the voicemail system and let you log in, check your mail and stuff. The second step after that is to hang up if you called voicemail. And then finally, if you dial 9, you're going to get a directory of, you know, if you don't know the name of the person, right, you're trying to call, just type their name. And we have a voicemail comp file over here that tells us, well, there's some format stuff. How do we want to create sound files when people leave us a message? And we get some strings in there that say who we are, I'm Digital Ordnance, and we can send, one of the things that Asterisk does with its voicemail is send email. So it leaves it in the normal voicemail system, right? Leaves it in your mailbox. You can pick it up on your phone. If you pick up a phone that doesn't have a voicemail indicator, it makes a stutter tone on your phone to say, hey, you've got voicemail, right? And you know you can go pick it up. And then you just dial 8 because that's what we defined as the number that says call voicemail, right? So you just dial 8, you'd be in your voicemail system. But it also sends you email and it attaches the voicemail message to the email. And in fact, it has a long message and a short message, so it can send it to a pager as well and just use a shorter email format for the pager message. So I've got extension 201, has a password of 1234, and it's my name, and it sends mail to daryl@nospam.com, and 202 sends 1234 to daryl@nospam.net or whatever, and I can have pagers and stuff. So what I end up doing is it sends me email with my voicemail in it, and then it pages my cell phone to tell me I've got a message as well. And that works really well. So now you start to get a useful system, right? Now you can call this from the PSTN. You can call this from a VoIP phone. You can assign as many users as you want. They all get voicemail addresses, right? You can drive a little menu system here that points people at different mailboxes and plays different sounds for them, and you're starting to get a useful box.
How do you record your voice prompt?
You can do it through the phone. That's the easiest way. The other thing you can do is you can record a sound file and process it to an appropriate format and drop it in. And that can be a higher quality, you know, if you have a good microphone and, you know, your phone may not have the best microphone, but it's a little more work to do the processing correctly to drop it in sound files. Come over here, I'll come back. Well, it's going to depend a lot. And the answer is, what do you have to do with the box, right? If for this, we're not doing a lot of work, right? We're talking to Free World Dial-Up using ULAW encoding, which is the minimal, you know, high bandwidth, but no processing. And ULAW can pass through the whole rest of this without any transcoding, because it can go through the rest of this process without that. So that's nice. We don't work it too much. But it's going to depend on how many phones you got attached, how much transcoding you're doing, what other scripts and stuff are you trying to run. All of that's going to impact the performance. You really want a dedicated box to play with it, don't bother. Use whatever box you got, right? Because you're not really using this for a production system. When you want to use this for your real office, you want a dedicated box. And, you know, P3s and stuff are fine, right? They have plenty of processing power. You can get smaller stuff too if you're really little office, right? But it depends heavily. You're really going to have to try it and find out. And back on this side.
You said that extension 8 was like your voicemail.
Right.
Where is that actually defined?
Here in my extensions.conf, I defined... I said there's incoming, right? This is a set of pattern matching. And it says if I get the number 1, rule number 1 is call voicemail for user 201. Rule number 2 is voicemail 202. If you dial an 8, go to the voicemail main, right, which is the one that I just talked about there, right? If you dial a 9, give me the directory,
so right? That defines all of the different extensions right there.
Exactly. That defines all the extensions right there. And you can do pattern matching in this, too. So if you know all your extensions start with 2, you can say 2 underscore, right? Underscore 2 dot means anything that starts with 2, send it here.
But how do you tell what comes into what context or within the extension?
You've got to go through that a little bit further, but if we went back to our IAX conf, I said the context was from Free World Dial-Up. That's how it tells it where to start in the processing. And then this has a phone number, the Free World Dial-Up user ID here, is the number that it came in from Free World Dial-Up, so it knows which phone number you called at Free World Dial-Up. On the right.
I see that even though the system calls extensions, in your case, they're all going basically to some kind of voicemail.
In this case, they're all going to voicemail.
Only that's because you're in a home office.
That's correct, although we will go to phones in a minute. this is the simpler first step in the process, right?
Can the extensions be more than one number? Like,
yes, you can. You can ring multiple. You can not only ring multiple of them at the same time, you can also say, try this one, then try this one, then try this one, right? Because these are sequences of rules that get executed, like this one that says, call voicemail is, if you dial an 8, call voicemail on the first step, and then 8-2 is hang up, right? So that can be 8-1, call phone number 1, 8-2, call phone number 2, 8-3, call phone number 3, right? And you can try them in sequence. And you can do some, and as soon as the call initiates, that'll end that processing. So it will stop.
If someone were, if you didn't want to use like one, like say I have like 15 people, can I do like 1-5 in the extension? Or did you have
you can definitely do pattern matching on the extensions that say anything that looks like 1-5, anything, just dial that number directly, right? Absolutely. There's lots of pattern matching that works in this too. But again, these config files are a little bit ugly, right? I mean, we're really talking about, you know, pattern matching and including and macros and all that kind of ucky stuff, right? That's one of the issues with Asterisk is that it's really powerful, but you got to be able to deal with this. You got to be a bit of a programmer. So our Asterisk configuration can be really big. We can have a card in our Asterisk box that talks to the public switch telephone network. We can have an Asterisk. We can have a card that talks to regular analog phones. We can have a LAN with SIP phones on it. We can have soft phones, we can have the VoIP provider on the LAN, we can have an ATA device which allows an analog phone to connect into your Ethernet, and we can have some sort of gateway box like the Sephora FX3000 that does other, you know, interfacing with you. So lots of different ways that we can connect to an Asterisk box. And there's a thing for connecting an alarm system, there's stuff for doing home management tools, lots of this stuff can all tie into this. I don't know whose stuff it is because I just saw the references, but I've never played with it. But I mean, we can definitely call scripts, so you know it's pretty easy to tie anything you want. We're going to talk about that further. So once we say that there's all these different ways to do stuff, we can get to more complications in this. And I'm not going to go over this in a lot of detail. But here I have a macro that says, you know, make a call to a certain SIP number or make a call to an IAX number. I've got some stuff to what happens if no one answers. I want you to go to voicemail. If they're busy, I want you to go to a different voicemail information. If I dial anything that starts with a 7, I want you to automatically go to Free World Dial-Up. So if I dial 7473770, I'll call my own phone system again through Free World Dial-Up. So that's a pattern match there that says underscore 7 dot, right, means anything that starts with a 7. Right, do that. I have some stuff here that I have a standard extension thing that says for all my normal extensions, I have this standard extension thing. We've replaced the way over on that far side. We've replaced the macro that used to say go straight to voicemail. to macro standard extension 201, macro standard extension 202, right? And standard extension here is a little macro that says step one, playback, please wait. So it says, you dial 201, it says, please wait while I connect your call. And then it calls another macro called make call, which just does a dial and waits 32 seconds and stays connected to the line while we do that. And then the last one is go to a status based on what happened with that call. And the status stuff down here says no answer, then we're going to go to voicemail, busy, we're going to go to a different voicemail. You have a busy message and a not busy message, right? Daryl's not here or Daryl's on the phone. Then there's some error conditions, right, if the rest of those happen. So another one of the extensions, I've dialed extension, I've got extension 201, 202. I've also got a 444 meet me. That's a conferencing system that's built into Asterisk. So you call into my phone and you dial 444 and it's going to drop you into the meet me conference room number 1234. And anyone else who calls in, you'll all be able to talk to each other. Again, that's going to be more work on my box. My box is now going to do all that sound mixing and sending it to all these other people. So that's why it's hard to tell you how much CPU power you're going to need. But it's another fun feature that we can use. And here's some SIP conf's. They look a lot like the IAX conf that I showed you earlier. This is essentially defining how SIP phones are going to interact, right? I'm going to register with some service provider. I'm just defining what codecs I allow and don't allow. I have some information that says, hey, this is the context. When this phone operates, I want it to go to the context called home. So when I'm inside, I want to allow people to dial out. But if you're coming from the outside, I don't want you to be able to do that, right? So I'm going to put them in different contexts. One of them has the ability to call out. One of them doesn't. I got some information about passwords and caller ID so the phone can register with me and say, hi, I'm here, right? And I'm the right phone. But a SIP conf looks a lot like an IAX conf and just has all that kind of information.
Where are the resources to learn what you've learned? Is that
there? No, there's a few things. We'll get resources at the end. There's a couple things on resources. So let me talk about some more features. Asterisk can monitor / record calls, right? It can say, anytime this number gets called, also send it here. I want to listen to it, right? I want to have a supervisor check on this call, or I want to record it automatically. Of course, you got to keep Asterisk in the data voice. Don't reinvite in data path, because if you reinvite phone to phone, then Asterisk isn't going to get that information anymore. In fact, Asterisk won't reinvite if it knows it needs to do those things. If your phone has multiple call appearances, then your phone can put a call on hold and three-way call and all the rest of that. When you buy a digital SIP phone, it has multiple call appearances. When you buy an ATA box, it has multiple call appearances. But if you had a phone that didn't know how to do any of those things and your box didn't know how to do any of those things, you can say, whenever I hit pound on my phone, that's going to put me, tell Asterisk that I want to put the call on hold, and Asterisk will hold it instead of your SIP device holding it for you. So you can do that processing on the Asterisk box. Of course, all the data has to keep going through the Asterisk box. But you can, if your phone doesn't support it, you can do it that way. With dial plans, I can have lots of VoIP providers. I can have lots of termination providers. I can do things like say, if this is a local call, I want to go out my PSTN interface because I get free calling. And then if I have long distance in the US, I want to go to these guys. And if I have long distance in Europe, I want to go to these guys, right? Because all I have to do is pattern match on the strings that you're calling and decide whose service you're going to route the calls out of, which is a really nice feature. Lots of competition. We can do pickup groups. You can say all these guys are in a call group, and if you hit *8, you'll pick up everybody in the call group, that kind of thing, so you define phones and call groups. We can do call queues. That's your typical, you know, please wait while an operator, you know, for an operator to assist you, and as soon as the operator hangs up, their phone rings, and right, that kind of stuff. We can do those call queues. Yes. In fact, they have a discussion in some of the Asterisk docs about the girlfriend processing, right? But absolutely. And we can have time-sensitive rules. We can say if it's between 9 and 5, then go ahead and allow them to do this. If it's not, drop them automatically into the into the administrator's box, or maybe it's my answering service takes over at that point or whatever. Yeah. The answer is, I haven't done a lot of it, but the answer is I understand most of it is there. There are manager protocols and stuff that allow you to interact from the outside with the Asterisk box. So I just haven't done call. Yes, you can definitely do. You can do a couple. Like I said, you can do a couple different things. Okay, well, I haven't got there, but we can do calls that ring multiple people. We can do calls that ring in sequence, right? So you can do it either way. So you can do a follow me, right? Well, try my phone.
Well, hunt groups would be, if person A is not there, then try person B.
Right, well, that's what I said. That would, you just try them in sequence, and it'll and if their phone isn't registered, you can do presence too, right? You can say, I'm here, right? Therefore, I'm in the group, I'm in the sequence, or I'm not, right? But even if they're not, even if you don't do that level, you can say, ring this phone for 10 seconds. If nobody answers, it's going to ring the next one, right, for 10 seconds until somebody answers. So you can definitely define those sorts of rules. All of those things that we're talking about are kind of standard PBX features. You'd see them in anybody's PBX. Some of the fun stuff that you can do with Asterisk that isn't in your father's PBX, we can read and write values from a database. So we can define extensions and stuff all in a database and have Asterisk access the database rather than reading it out of config files. We can have the database change the behavior of the system depending on whatever you want, right? You change the database externally to say, there's too many people in the call queue, send it to my other processing center, you know, whatever it is, right? So you can configure that sort of stuff through the database. You can call arbitrary applications. I can call, one of them is Festival speech generator. So I can have Asterisk generate some text phrase at random, right? And then send it through Asterisk, and Asterisk will say, you know, you're an idiot, or whatever it is that your text phrase is. That was a bad example, sorry. Exactly. Absolutely, right? And it can do call out, too. So you can do that kind of thing, too, of, hey, I'm a school, it's a snow day, right? Let's automatically start calling every parent that tell them that that happened, right? That we're closed, school's closed today.
Or have the parents be able to call and check the grades.
Yeah, absolutely. Or check grades, right? All that information. And in fact, you know, you can either do pre-recorded sound files or you can have Festival generate. You know, Susie got an A on, you know, this. Homework for today is, right, as a lot of schools are doing now, right? So Festival lets you do generation of textual speech. Maybe you read that information out of a database and then fed it through Festival. And if you have pre-recorded sound files, you can just play them. So the voice quality is a little better if you have pre-recorded sound files. There's a lady who does like all the Asterisk sound files, and there was a group effort that said, let's figure out all the words we want to do and do a big bulk buy from her, and they did that. So the sound file, the contributed sound files under Asterisk have gotten much bigger just recently, with lots of department names and all types of things people thought of that would be useful things to have her voice. But of course, you're still gonna want that script that says, you know, hi, thanks for calling Digital Ordnance, and then you gotta pay her for that. So I think it's still building business for her. I don't think she's losing anything. There are external manager applications. There's a protocol for there's a TCP protocol for talking to Asterisk. So you have applications like the Flash operator panel that basically shows you what every phone is doing, who's in meetings. You can trick it. It's written in Flash, but you can drag and click and, you know, make calls move between people. And, you know, it's a really nifty console for a receptionist, right? On one sense, and people have done lots of other things with them. The monitoring capability, but you can essentially do any command, initiate calls, any command, start, go through the processing using the manager interface.
Some of the chip phones, your Cisco phones and stuff that have the extended console kind of the buttons and screens, can you access that?
Some. There's actually, that's one of the things that's one of the places we'll see where Asterisk is a little bit limited at this point, which is that when things are very device specific, nobody's written stuff for them, right? The generic SIP stuff all works, but when you start going, how do I make that button light up on that phone? It's usually something very specific. So those are less supported. They've given you the ability in the CVS version that hasn't made it to the release yet. They've given you the ability to get at all of the headers that are in, used to be able to get at individual headers, but now they give you the ability to get at all the headers by asking for them by name, right? Rather than calling them out one function at a time, right? And you can get them and set them. So, for example, my Sepura 841 phone is a SIP phone, and it has an intercom mode where you can call it and you can add an extra header that says, I want to go in intercom mode. And so if I call you and I put that extra header in, your speaker automatically goes on your phone and I start talking at you, right? And it comes out your phone, which is really annoying, actually. But a lot of people use that feature. At least if it was an assistant and a boss, it sort of makes sense. But it's really annoying when I had a big facility and people were doing that all the time, and you'd all of a sudden, because he broadcast it on everybody's phone. Right? But what we're talking about here is Asterisk is an application interface, right? It's a voice application platform. So we can do lots of fun stuff. When you said we got a whole ability to add programs to this. So I'm just throwing out some of the ideas and some of the things that you can do with this. Credit card prepaid calling, right? Go to the website, pay it with a credit card, goes through PayPal, whatever. You authorize, you have 1-800 number, they type their account number, you make the outgoing call the rest of the way. There's a little bit of database programming involved, right? It has call data logs that keep track of everything, all the calls that are made. Boom, you're now, you know, you've got your own call center, right? You've got your own credit card payment system just based on an Asterisk box. Dating service, right? Give everybody their own mailboxes, let them send messages between each other, right? That can all be driven through a web interface, right? Click here to call me, right? Where all it does is start an application on the client side that does the voice end, right, off their microphone and sends it through your phone, right, through your system. Live chat, right? You've got meet me rooms that you can make up. Follow me, right? Try my phone here, here, and here, right? Then go to my cell, then start routing calls to my cell phone, then route it to my assistant, right, or whatever, right? We can do all that kind of stuff. We talked about call centers and agents, right? Yeah?
I'm thinking of an application, but I'm presuming too much, I think. Are there any providers out there that will send to the Asterisk box multiple calls to the same number while one call is...
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, the VoIP provider I use actually lets unlimited incoming calls come in. I'm using BroadVoice. They're actually pretty friendly. They let you bring your own. Right. Right. BroadVoice, yeah. There are other people that will do that too, but I like their offering. Games. Two of them, I don't remember, if some of the local folks probably remember KLOS did a thing called the Lost Vault, right? And they would give you a code number on the air that said, you know, today, this hour's code is you know, boom, right? And then you'd call in and you'd say, here's my phone number, and you'd type in boom, and you'd be able to guess a digit of your combination. If you could spell out the 10-digit combination, you'd win $10,000 or whatever it is, right? The whole thing could be implemented on an Asterisk box. Right, or a set of them, depending on how much load you're going to take simultaneously, right? Because every time the user starts up, I generate a random number, I stick it in the database, right? Every hour when the password changes, I type that into the system to say, here's the new password for the hour. I give a voice prompt that says, thanks for calling the Lost Vault. What's the password? You know, whatever. What's your mailbox, right? What's your guess for your random number, right? And I check it against the digits of that you're trying to guess. So that was on a local radio station. I don't know, you guys probably have seen the game Taboo, right? You get handed a word and you're supposed to not use a list of other words while you're trying to get your teammates to guess the word, right? And that's basically it, right? So my word is mountain and I'm not allowed to use hill or Everest or whatever, and I'm supposed to get my guys to do it. You could implement that entirely in the phone system, right? Everybody calls in, the phone system hands out the name, the words to everybody, uses Festival to generate the text. Somebody actually did this with Asterisk, made this Taboo game with Asterisk. Training purposes, I can monitor calls, I can record calls, all that kind of stuff. Virtual office is one of the things I'm using, which is when you call up my system, it says, if you want support, press 4. I might not be around, so I need it to try different people. I've got some other guys on call with me that I pay on an hourly basis if they have to handle a call for me, and their SIP phone registers with my PBX at my house, and it works fine. And I can look at the call data log and see how many minutes they spent on things, right, if I want to. Web presence, web calling, right, your users can click on a web form that says I'm here or I'm not here, and your phones can ring or not, right, to do all that. So realistically, you've got the ability to tie in arbitrary programs with a voice processing system. You can generate text. There's not a lot of good speech recognition yet, and speech recognition is a lot of CPU power. So doing general purpose, like the Tell Me service that you've probably seen out there, that's hard on an Asterisk box today just because the speech recognition isn't really there. But you can do a lot of, you definitely can do a lot of stuff. And there are, if your speech recognition is easier than that, you don't have to recognize individual words and that kind of stuff, then you can even do that kind of speech recognition. I was talking to somebody earlier who said they got a if a user loses their password, they can call up and say, you know, my name is Daryl, and et cetera, and it does a little voice print match, right? It doesn't have to be very accurate because all it's doing is telling him, sending, emailing him his password or whatever. But you can do that kind of thing.
There's some very simple speech recognition out there. I've heard from the system do this already, that they tell you what the choices are that you can say.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's an easier way to do it, yes. I mean, in the speech world, speaker-independent limited vocabulary is relatively easy. Speaker-independent large vocabulary like dictation is really hard. So it kind of depends on what system you're asking. If you know that they're only going to say the word movie or television, then the processing is a lot easier and you can do it for more people with more accents and stuff. Gotchas. Oh, I'm really running late. I told you I was going to be late. NAT's a problem. And NAT's a problem because SIP says, let's start up a session and let's put the data on this port. And the problem is your NAT box that's in between doesn't know what port you just picked. It's on, you know, because it had no information about that. That packet just went out and it never looked at it. So you can do a couple things. IAX tunnels very nicely through NAT, which is one of the reasons I used it for the free world dial-up configuration in the first place. You can do a virtual private network if you have employees at remote locations, have them set up a VPN. They probably need to get stuff off your web server anyway. Set up a VPN, do SIP through the VPN. That also encrypts all their SIP traffic over the wide open network, right, through the big internet. So that's a good thing. Most of the client tools use something called STUN, simple tunneling of UDP through NAT, which is a little trick where you send a packet to a STUN server and you see how the NAT box modified it, and then the server sends something back and see how the NAT box modified it, and then you can sort of figure out what's going on and predict how to make the changes the rest of the way. So most of your client stuff actually knows how to do STUN. So that works. Asterisk doesn't do STUN, but Asterisk has some rules in there for saying, I'm behind a NAT and here's what my firewall does. If you know what your firewall does, then you can fill it in Asterisk and make that mostly work. Echo can be a problem. Anytime you move from the digital to the analog side, you're sending a bunch of signals on a wire, and you get echoes back. And your box has to do echo cancellation, and that can be an issue. And sometimes it's adaptive echo. Sometimes the providers will do adaptive echo cancellation, where you'll hear echoes for like the first, you know, 2 seconds, 5 seconds of the conversation, and then they go away. That's because they're training the echo system to figure out how long the delay is going to be before it kicks in. So sometimes you'll hear some echoes. If you stay all digital, like I have that SIP phone at home, and I go out through my broad voice port, there's no issue at all because it stays digital the whole way. There's some, Asterisk is fairly young, and there's still a lot of development happening, and not all the features are there that you might want, but a big chunk of them are.
I would say it's that young. It started in 99 or 98 or something.
It's but it's only made 1.0. Okay, but PBX systems have been around since 1950,
right,
and they do lots of things really well that Asterisk doesn't. That's all I'm trying to say.
It's not robust.
Absolutely. I'm not saying it's not robust.
It's solid.
Absolutely. Okay. That is absolutely true. I would not say it's not robust. I would just say that it doesn't have all, as I said, it's young, development's still being done, doesn't have all the features you want, right? That's more the issue. It is very robust, and they are pretty good about, you know, as far as I can tell, the 1.x versions that are out there, they've done a real good job with them. There's been a few gotchas on them, but they're moving those very slowly and then, you know, getting the CVS head to get stable before they push it back. Encryption's not widely supported. There are some issues. There are some protocols for encryption of RTP packets, but you want to be a little careful who's listening in on your phone calls, right? It is possible with certain devices and certain stuff. There's a standard for it. My Sephora phone speaks an encrypted format. You need to have certified keys and stuff. Asterisk doesn't do any of that, right? So it's sort of an issue of, you know, which devices are you talking to? What have they implemented, right? Again, if I were really doing this for my guys that are remote, I put them through a VPN, right? And then they just SIP in the clear under my VPN, and they end up internally.
I mean, but on the wide
area. Right. And in fact, the problem is the providers don't have the horsepower to do a lot of encrypted voice channels, right? So I expect that to change at some point, but today everything you're sending out over the wide area is unencrypted. Asterisk doesn't really support SIP URLs well. It sort of has some basic capability for calling a SIP URL rather than a phone number. But if my if I type in a username in my phone, in my SIP phone, and I say dial it, Asterisk gets confused. It's a known bug. I think SIP URLs are really cool, and I would love to see the world get rid of phone numbers, right, and go to SIP URLs, but there are lots of hurdles before we really get there. So learning curve is steep. Read the docs. Take small tests. Take tall, small steps. Test your changes, right? Can't emphasize that one enough. If you're using this for a production system, make a duplicate. Give it a separate port. Test everything that way before you turn it on. I know I've made bad configs all the time. Overloading your Asterisk box is going to degrade call quality. It really should have a dedicated box, and you need to be somewhat aware of how many channels you're covering, how much data is Asterisk actually processing. And there are some load measurement tools in Asterisk, and you can tell when the quality starts sounding really shitty. When I first started playing, I was doing a BitTorrent, and I ran Asterisk at the same time. I did BitTorrent. Like, wow, that really is awful, because I'm not doing any quality of service, and the BitTorrent was getting enough bandwidth out of my provider that I'm pretty much saturating my link to my provider, and then my voice quality gets really bad. Gee, what a surprise. But it was an interesting test. 911's a little problematic because we don't really know where you are with a VoIP system, right? You're coming over the internet, and I could be in my office or I could be in a hotel in Las Vegas, and I can still connect through the same thing. So if I dial 911, where the hell am I? The providers will assign one location to you and say, if you dial 911, I'm going to assume you're at your house, right? So you want to be careful about that, right? That's really it. You want to be a little careful about what you know, dialing 911. What does that mean? And if your house is burning down and a random person picks up the phone and dials 911, are they going to try to get outside line number 11, right? Because they just dialed 9 followed by 11, not realizing you're running a PBX at your house, right? So be careful about what you do with 911. It's there for emergencies, and in emergencies, all hell is breaking loose, right? So I have a special case that says if I see 911, I'm dialing it through my PSTN line. And that's it, right? I catch that as a... Exactly. I do that with my dial plan. I explicitly catch that and do not do standard processing with it and send it out my PSTN line, not through my VoIP broad voice provider, right?
And it hangs up whoever's on the voice.
I can't actually force that, but...
Take a look
at I don't know how to do that. Let's put it that way. I probably could. The answer is, how do you make 911? How do you make sure 911 is really working? And the answer is, you're very polite and you call up and you say, "Hi, I'm doing a 911 test. If you're busy, let me hang up on me immediately. And if not, you know, tell me where you got this call from. Thank you. Goodbye." And they're okay with that. In general, you can call your local police department and check that they're okay with that. If they're really swamped, they may not even want you to do that. But usually, there's some way for you to do some testing of that sort.
Would free will be able to get that information too?
I don't know. He asked if 311 could get that information. I just don't know. Network traffic can cause you to lose quality on your voice. Yeah, like I said, if you're running a BitTorrent download and you fill up your network traffic, then your voice gets strangled out and it sounds really bad. Quality of service allows you to say, hey, make my voice traffic more important, but your router has to do it, and in an ideal world, your ISP and everybody does it too, so that it actually gets a long way through the pipe before it gets congested. But at least having it on your router that gets you to the outside world is a win. Fax and data calls are a problem. Fax mostly works if you use ULAW encoding, the high bitrate standard telephone-ish encoding. There's a thing called T38, which is a store and forward, because you know a fax is just going to be a page, right? So you get it, as soon as it hits the VoIP network, it gets encoded, and then that gets sent to the other end, and then it gets sent back to your fax machine as one big packet, right? So that's what T38 does for you, so that's nice. Data calls don't work. You can't take the data call and then encrypt it through encode it through VoIP and then expect it to come out at all. So my TiVo and my DirecTV can't make their calls in, which is one of the reasons I keep an analog line at home. I use my fax and my TiVo and my DirecTV.
Has DirecTV negotiated its data rate down?
There are some issues. I don't know if they have or not. I mean, everything I've heard, no one's made that successfully work, right? And
when I talk to DirecTV about it, one of their guys says that, yeah,
on real crappy phone lines, our stuff will negotiate down to a lower.
Yeah, but that may not be enough to handle the encoding that's going on for your VoIP.
It's not so much just an issue of the data, the dithering and the data conversion, but that when you're going from digital to analog, you get delays and echoes and stuff.
Yes.
And even 300 baud or whatever.
Yeah. Right. I mean, what he's saying is you get echoes and delays and, you know, you're sending packets that are not consistently timed, right? And your voice, it sort of works. But, you know, even those things in the data lines, as soon as that happens, things get really bad. So data is a real problem. They really need to do something that's internet-based. And TiVo has, but DirecTV hasn't. You can have your TiVo directly use your internet connection. If you get your VoIP device from your provider, your ATA from your provider, be aware of whether or not it's locked, because it may be locked to that provider. And then if you choose to cancel it, you're either paying them or you've got a box you have to throw out and you can't reuse, right? So, the cost is almost the same. They discount the serve. They discount the price of the box by the same amount that they would charge you to unlock it or whatever, but. You know, be aware if you're getting it locked to a particular provider. I bought mine generic. I bought all my devices generic, but so I could play with them. And not all the providers actually support soft phones at all or IAX and Asterisk, right? So, you know, my provider, BroadVoice, doesn't actually do IAX. They do support Asterisk, sort of. They know it's there and they allow it, right? And they do soft phones, right? Other providers do IAX. Some don't allow you to do any of that. There's some add-ons. AppsMan is a management package that allows you to, you know, make phone calls transfer and go on hold and all that kind of stuff. AMP's a GUI for building the config files. By using a GUI, you're limiting what you can do with those config files. They only do things like say, I want to make extensions. I don't want, won't let me do fancier stuff that isn't programmed into the GUI, but it is a whole lot easier to set things up using a GUI. Flash operator panel is another management tool that does it through Flash on a web page and lets you put calls on hold and transfer and see who's calling who and all that fun stuff. Asterisk at Home is a whole package of a suite of things with AMP and some other tools built into it. There are some other VoIP systems out there. SIP Express Router is basically just a SIP processing box. It does a little bit of PBX stuff, but very little. I think it's actually what Earthlink is actually using for their service, right? It's big. Really highly efficient for lots of calls. It stays out of the loop as much as possible, does the minimal amount of processing, just connects everybody up with each other. SIP Foundry makes a PBX, very much like Asterisk, has a nice web interface. It only does SIP. You can't have plug-in cards that do other data rates and do PRI service and FXOs and FXSs. But it's also just came out they had their first real release very recently. I'm hoping that SIP Foundry and SIP Express, people use SIP Express with Asterisk a lot because SIP Express can do some of the basic processing in front when you have a lot of clients and only send the stuff that needs to go to Asterisk, so those get compared a lot. I'm hoping some of the cross-pollination between SIP Foundry and Asterisk will happen. Some brave new world stuff, right? Why do we use phone numbers, right? URLs are much easier. They're not scarcely limited. They're not geographically identified, right? Records let you do that. They allow you to say, hey, when you want to call Daryl at daryl.net, here's the way to connect to him. How do I know if a call is really a VoIP call? If I'm calling between my VoIP phone and another guy's VoIP phone, it would be nice if we didn't go out to the standard telephone company, go out through and then back into VoIP again. E164 lets me register phone numbers and say, this is a VoIP phone, so if anybody tries to call this, send them straight here to my VoIP number. And e164.org is the organization. It's an open source version, free, community run. There's also a e164.arpa, which is ITU-based, and I don't think they've actually done anything yet. But e164.org works. You can call them up. You go to their webpage, you say, here's my phone number, I've got this SIP URL, and they'll call you back, verify that it's you, give you a passcode that you type back into them again, so they do a little confirmation call. And if you do a lot of them, you're supposed to give them a donation because they're making all these phone calls. But with lots of VoIP providers and people providing incoming calls, 800 numbers, outgoing long distance, outgoing call packages, you have a ton of choices, and you can make plans that use that to your most effective means. And that's it. I went way over my time. but I'm done. I hope what I did out of this is give you an idea of what VoIP is and why it's interesting, and give you some of the terminology, give you some examples that you can try for essentially, $100, I think is the most expensive thing I had on that list. And a Sephora 3000 is about $100. Think of it not just as a PBX, but as a voice application platform, because we can do lots of cool stuff with it. Don't forget the panel, and there's some resources. And I didn't give away the Skittles. Anybody want Skittles?
Yeah. What do you consider high volume?
Hundreds of messages a day. It's high volume. It's somebody's conference, and they're giving away Skittles with it.
It's a good conference. I know about it. Really good last year, and should be even better this year.
Howdy.
Quite a few questions on the Asterisk users mailing list regarding using the Weiss modem as FXS.
Yes.
And nobody's got a specific answer. I was wondering if you go last year.
Yeah.
I've tried. I mean, Connexion does do full duplex.
Well,
and I was wondering why nobody did it. Is it because...